Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslofsky. I believe we're ready to do this thing together, so let me share a whole new world with you. This is episode number 69. Word up, word up. I'm super duper happy and grateful that you're cranking me up today. We have a lot to explore together in this episode, and I just want to hit it. So let's flow, baby. I met my guest for this episode, Anthony Ungaro, the same way I might meet you someday. Maybe even in a few days, if you happen to be at South by Southwest Interactive in Austin, Texas, between March 13th and 18th, 2015, because I'll be there representing the curators, simplifiers, and of course the spreadsheet fanatics. Anyway, Anthony was sitting at a table at a very nerd-friendly event we were both attending last year called Minibar. And I sat down across from him to repeat a ritual that I do over and over again when I don't know somebody within 10 feet of me, striking up a conversation with a stranger. Now, fast forward to almost a year later, he's a good friend, a constant inspiration, and a prominent face in the world of minimalism and simple living. Take one look at the guy. I mean, how could you not be a prominent face with a great beard like he can grow, probably in about 2 seconds? We kept this episode pretty tight, yet he and I covered a lot of great ground in not a lot of time. You'll hear us explore the world of intentional living and describe what we and others actually mean when we talk about being intentional. There's some serious minimalism chatter to absorb as well, framed up awfully nice in a unique way that I've never quite heard before. Plus, we discuss some crazy twitches that many of us had, myself included, which can be broken and maybe, just maybe, Anthony and I make a promise to sing a duet of a popular Disney movie song that you probably won't guess. Saddle up, buckle up, do what you gotta do. Just get ready to get down with us. Here we go. What's up? What's up, Smart and Simple Matters friends? Are you stoked? I'm stoked. Because on the other side of the mic with me today is my friend, Anthony Ungaro. He's the marketing director of the Twin Cities Bike Sharing System, Nice Ride, Minnesota, which means the dude knows something about the share economy. But today, we're going to focus on the themes of his website, breakthetwitch.com. Just to give you the Twitter-length overview, Break the Twitch is about examining the ways we act without thinking and live without being present. But it's also about making your life super awesome-o through minimalism, which Anthony is well on his way to doing. And he's also a huge fan of the Lean Startup methodology. One of my primary hopes, at least, is to get me to be less comprehensive in everything else I do. If I keep talking with him, I think I'm going to make some progress on it. Minimum viable product, right, baby?
You got it.
Well, Anthony, it's great to have you on the show. Just so we can get some context, we're going to start where we always start, the seeds of awesomeness. So if you could give us maybe something about your environment as a child or one or two experiences, formative experiences as you were growing up that helps us understand who you are right now.
Wow. Well, that's a great question. And Joel, again, thanks for having me. Definitely excited to speak with you here. So starting out, you know, I think I had a pretty stable and in a way kind of experimentally safe childhood. So I don't know that there were a ton of like really crazy things that shaped me in a huge way that I think of right away here. But at the same time, you know, definitely starting out in music when I was about 11, taking piano lessons and starting off, that was something that definitely shaped my path in a big way all the way until now. Just kind of playing by ear and taking lessons and doing different things and experimenting with different instruments, things like that, definitely got me along the path.
So when you're saying experimentally safe, so you are encouraged to try new things and to take on risks, but in safe environments. It's not like you were encouraged to try to go hitchhike across the country when you were six or anything like that.
Right. I feel I was really privileged as a young kid in a lot of ways. My mother was a Spanish teacher. She taught for 31 years. And so there were a few summers during my childhood that I got to spend in Spain, for example. So I got to essentially kind of get out of the box and learn how other people live and in other countries. And it definitely gave me some eye-opening experiences along with just about everything else. But just kind of into different ways of life and that there isn't just one way to do everything.
Yeah. Well, this has been a reoccurring theme for a lot of the folks that I talk to, traveling. And I know you're super into traveling now, but traveling, especially when you're young and just being exposed to an alternate way of thinking and of living, maybe a different pace, maybe different priorities. When you were in Spain for that time when you were growing up, was there something in particular that you noticed about the culture or the way that people conducted themselves, which has shaped the kind of guy that you are right now?
Definitely. There's most certainly a level of closeness in relationships that I noticed. Maybe it's in Europe as a whole, or I know that specifically in Spain I experienced this, but I made incredible friends while I was there. And it really, the first time I was there was when I was about 11. And so in a way, it really shaped how I became it really shaped what I knew of friendships and what I wanted out of them. That was definitely the most poignant example of something that I learned.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us, before we get into some things that I have in mind, so what do you want out of friendships?
Yeah, definitely. So authenticity is definitely one of the biggest things that's important to me. Just communication, being open, honest with each other. And I'm really not into the whole kind of like the overly masculine thing that where you know, guys can't hug and stuff. I hug everybody. I hug all my friends. So
me too.
You know, it's just kind of I'm over that, like that kind of thing.
Okay. So when you have authenticity and hugs and you combine the two and you get a good authentic hug, that just totally does it for you.
It's the greatest thing ever. Yeah,
for sure. It really is an amazing thing. It's really, I think it was, so just a little side note. So last year when the Minimalists came to town for their book tour, I remember Ryan saying that when you hug somebody, you're no longer strangers. You're on the path to friendship. And ever since he said that, I mean, I've always been a hugger in the past, but just over the last 8 months or so, now that we're recording this in March 2015, I've really internalized that. And I don't make anyone, I don't force anyone to hug me, but I always encourage people, if they're willing to do it, like, just, even if you're 4'11" and I'm 6'6" and it's kind of weird, like I'm enveloping you in my arms, let's just hug it out real quick. And then it from a physiological perspective, it's beneficial. From just an intimacy between people, it works for strangers, it works for good friends. So I'm glad that we're both on the same page there.
Definitely. If you're familiar with the love languages, that's my top one, the physical affection. And, you know, obviously that kind of affection just between friends, it's like a great way to communicate that you care about someone. So I don't know.
Yeah. I had a feeling it wasn't gift giving. We won't get into that one right now, though.
Right. We'll step away from that one.
All right. Well, hey, let's get into some of the meat of things. There's a lot of awesome stuff that you're up to, and I want to make sure the people who are listening understand what you're up to right now, how you got on this path towards where you are. So first of all, I mentioned when I was introducing you, there's this thing, this pretty recent thing called Break the Twitch. And I absolutely love knowing what's in a name. Can you tell us what the deal is with Break the Twitch?
Absolutely. So Break the Twitch came about when it was after reviewing probably a year, and the story that I often tell is how I came to minimalism in a way through an excessive use of online shopping. But really, it came fully when I realized that the Twitch, as I call it, is not just one thing. I realized that the Twitch embodies all these things that we do without doing them intentionally. So that can be a one-click purchase online. That can be taking out your phone in an idle moment just to scroll through an Instagram feed or something like that. And it's those things that we do without having an intention of why we do it. Sometimes we just kind of impulsively buy something, like I mentioned, and we get the dopamine rush and it comes through. And I started to paint this picture of all of these different things that seemed a whole lot more like a twitch than an actual movement. And so that's where the concept for Break the Twitch came from, because the goal that I have for myself, because obviously a lot of the site is me talking about my own struggles and the things that I'm doing to get over them. But I realized this theme kind of existed over across all of these different things. And so Break the Twitch was my way to overcome them.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a couple of parts there. One is to realize there's a twitch and that you are acting impulsively, or you're scratching every itch that you have. And then two, it's figuring out, how do I not do that so much? How do I live more intentionally in terms of my relationship with technology, the quality time that I'm spending with my friends? Am I on the right pace or the right track here?
Absolutely. It's often the thing you don't realize you're actually doing, which makes it really hard to first figure out, but then solve.
Yeah, I'd say so. Tell us, so one of those things that you didn't realize you were doing, you mentioned one-click purchases, and I know I've heard your story. You told, it's Simple Rev 2014, you told a great story. I'm going to link to it in the show notes because I want people to actually see you and hear you tell this story live. It was great. But can you tell us, over the course of 4 years, what were you doing on Amazon?
The short version is this. Effectively, I had Amazon Prime, and I don't want to hate on Amazon specifically because I think you can do this with just about any other online shopping website. But, I effectively was one-click purchasing my way to spending the majority of my disposable income, $20 to $50 at a time. And it was just this constant, it seemed like there were just always boxes coming to the house every other day. And it was always like calligraphy pens or a remote control helicopter for $20. That was totally fun to play with, by the way. But,
it sounds like a good deal too.
Right. It's a good deal. But, you know, famously said that the road to bankruptcy is paved with good deals. That's a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, it was funny because I come from a personal finance background. So I didn't allow these things, just continually purchasing these things, to drive me into debt. But at the end of the month, it always seemed like I was barely just scraping by. So effectively, over 4 years, I ended up pulling a report of all my spending for the entire four-year period. And it ended up being something just, to me, ludicrous. That could have been like 6 or 7 international plane tickets to travel to places I would have loved to go. That collective result was shocking.
Wow. So now that you have made this shift, you pulled the report, you saw the cold, hard numbers in front of you, and you and your wife, Amy, you mentioned travel. And I know that's something that, now that you've taken on a more intentional, more minimalist philosophy, you are doing so much more traveling because you've reoriented your life towards being in motion, a man of action as opposed to a man of consumption. I'm curious because this strikes me when you and I were on the same wavelength when it comes to leading an intentional life. But one thing that I struggle with is, how do you explain an intentional life to people who aren't on your same wavelength? What would you tell somebody who's listening to this and like, what? I hear these guys, they keep mentioning the word intentional. What the heck are they talking about?
That's a great question, and one I'm exploring every day. I think the main component of it is having, for the example of the cell phone twitch that I talk about, that you get pulled into something, or having notifications on all of your apps and your phone is constantly buzzing and you're getting text messages. The biggest example of what the intentional aspect of that is would be you deciding when you want to look at your phone and check the apps, as opposed to the phone notifying you and telling you, and you get that kind of uncomfortable feeling as soon as you'll be sitting at dinner and your phone buzzes and something happens and you kind of look at it a little bit, but you know, it's still pretty rude to probably grab your phone in the middle of dinner or a conversation. That's probably slowly fading culturally at this point, but you get that uncomfortable feeling and you get a little anxious wondering what it could be. It's taking back control of those moments in those situations, pausing and actually asking yourself, why am I doing this? Am I doing it because I want to do it, or am I doing it simply as a Twitch reaction to this thing?
How do you remove them? Do you put your phone on mute so you don't hear it? Do you put it into airplane mode so that any notifications that would come up don't come through? Have you completely eliminated push notifications so that you're only using your phone when you intend to? How's this working for you?
I have just a couple things. A great friend of mine, Matt DeCure, sat me down at lunch one day, and after my phone had gone off probably 6 times during our lunch, he grabbed my phone and went through and turned off every single audio notification in my phone.
Okay.
That was a couple months before the SimpleRev event that you mentioned, and a massive amount of stress immediately was relieved when it was just quiet. Since that point, I have turned back text messages. So I do get a notification for text messages. And when I have my phone on silent mode, it doesn't vibrate. It just is completely silent. Mm. So that's the situation. When I want it to be quiet completely, I can just flip that switch. Otherwise, there are no apps. I turn off all notifications for apps. There's no reason why Hipmunk, which is a great app, but there's no reason why it needs to just randomly get my attention. Mm-hmm. It's a tool, and I use it when I want to use it, right?
I don't know what Hipmunk is, but I know you're a hip dude, so it doesn't surprise me that you're using an app called Hipmunk. I'll have to look at it, and maybe I'll link to it in the show notes if it's cool enough.
It's a fantastic travel app for finding good deals on flights.
Okay. Well, this does sound like it's worth exploring, at least for me personally. Maybe other people feel the same way. We'll let them make that decision if they want. All right. So I'm starting to unravel some things. I'm starting to see some themes in terms of just being not just intentional, just being more focused and being more present with the people that you're with. Can you tell me a little bit about what this has done in terms of the pace at which you live? Do you now have a much more self-paced life, or are you using that extra time or extra attention in other ways that's building up the quality of your relationships or your Break the Twitch website? How are you reallocating your attention towards things that are meaningful?
We're essentially, and I say we as in my wife and I, Amy, but we are reallocating time to work on projects that we really care about and spending time with people that we really care about. That's been the biggest transition. It's not as though we weren't seeing people before we were doing this or before we really got into this phase of our lives, but it's become a point where we've been able to focus more and better on the things that really do matter. And it sounds cliche, but in December, we played the Min's game, which is the minimalist game. I can talk about that a little bit.
Tell us how it works.
So in December, we each played the minimalist game, which is where on the first day of the month, you find one thing in your home and you donate it, recycle it, sell it. And the second day of the month, 2 things. Third day of the month, 3 things. And so on and so forth. Since we were playing in December, happens to have 31 days in the month. So it came out to just under 500 items each. And that was a major clearing of things and clutter from the house. So that was a big catalyst into the continued pursuit of physical minimalism in a way. Yes, we still have couches and everyone, my friends always joke asking me, so you have still have furniture, right? And things like that. It's a little silly, but.
Yeah, we both know the stigma and the misconceptions associated with minimalism.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you and Amy got rid of 1,000 things in December. I remember seeing some of Amy's tweets with the pictures on day 16, and it's starting to get a little bit hard, but the fact that you continue to make it through, kudos, man. It's a challenging game. I haven't taken it on personally just because I haven't felt the need to, but I know there are thousands of people who have been helped by the Mins game, and hopefully people who are... The thing about minimalism to me, and I've said this on other shows, I write about this on Value Simple, it's not about the stuff. It's not about the physical aspect. It really helps me get clear from a mental and emotional perspective. Yes, you can do that through your physical environment, but I tend to think of minimalism as something from the inside out. So it gives me my internal compass, which then manifests itself in the physical world, as opposed to the physical world dictating how I feel and what my stress levels are. So it's cool to see how different people enter into it, yet we're still going down the same path, one of more gratitude and contentment and seeing the world as an abundant place, as a scarce place. And I'm starting to pick up some of this from you too, which is pretty groovy.
Absolutely. I think for me, I tend to be a little more cluttered of the mind, I would say. And so as we've seen the physical space declutter, and all of a sudden there's not the change dish on the coffee table, and those things just kind of clear off and you see a more peaceful kind of nice surface areas, I've noticed that there is definitely more kind of mental calm and organization. That being said, the physical frontier in terms of minimalism is feeling really good. We're getting to a great place with that. But the digital side of things is still one of my struggles. It's still what I'm working on at this point.
There's a lot more in the digital world than there is in the physical world. And if you exist in the digital world as much as we do, it's a struggle. I struggle with it too. One thing I do want to ask you about though, because I can't let you, I mean, we're going to be chatting for a little bit longer here, but I can't let you escape without talking about this. You were talking about clean surface areas, and I'm just imagining the laundry that's getting folded on your clean surface areas. And I would like you to talk about your relationship with laundry and how it has changed in the past year. You wrote a pretty great article on Break the Twitch recently about it. Of course, like everything, other resource or good thing to check out, I'm going to link to it in the show notes. But I want people to hear from you. What about laundry, Anthony?
Thank you for asking. You know, I appreciate you reading the article as well. It's crazy because the laundry aspect of minimalism has been by far the most profound for me. It has completely changed my view of and the way that I do laundry and treat clothing. I've never been someone that has been particularly into fashion or anything. I've generally kept up with various trends and things, but I don't spend a lot of my money on clothing. I don't go shopping often for it. So it's just not something that I've kept up with. But at the same time, I had a ton of clothes. And for my entire life, laundry has just been this burden, an absolute burden. And it took...
That seems like an understatement. I think you've talked about avoiding like the plague or just despising it. And now it's almost close to a groovy ritual. Okay, so keep going.
You're absolutely correct. It was like a deep hatred because every time... And it took me literally getting rid of 70% of my clothing to realize what was going on. And it completely opened up that mental space to kind of realize what the habitual thing that was happening. And what that is I would wear everything in my huge clothing collection. And I would just keep wearing it because I hated doing laundry so much because of the cycle of having to do it, that I would wear all of my clothing to the very last thing. I'd get into clothing that I didn't even like anymore just because it was the available option, right? So all of my good clothes that I really liked were all dirty because those were the first ones to be worn. And then I'd wear like the weird shirts that, you know, I've had for a little too long or something. And, you know, those kinds of things. And they didn't quite fit right or I didn't feel great wearing it. But I'd wear it anyway just because it was available. And then eventually I would have like 6 loads of laundry to do on laundry day, and it would eat my entire Sunday just going back and forth between the washer and folding. It was terrible. Like, it was just awful. It took so much of my time. And so this process, and clothing was a big part of doing the minimalist game in December, but I've gotten even rid of even more since then. But paring it down, literally just getting rid of like 70 to 80% of my wardrobe, I started wearing a lot of the same kind of outfits now, and it just keeps it really easy. But I love the clothes that are left. And I think that's the biggest thing, is I appreciate so much the clothing that I have. I probably go about a week now, because after about a week, week and a half, I run out of underwear and undershirts, and I just have to do laundry. So it's one load of dark clothing, one load of whites, and I'm done. And it seriously takes like 20 minutes between, not including the time it's in the actual washer, but the actual manual labor of it. And it's nice. Like, I fold it and I put it vertically, as recommended by the KonMari method, in that pretty popular book right now, if you're familiar. It's the Japanese art of tidying up, I believe, or the life-changing magic of tidying up.
Yes. I have not read it yet, but it is all the rage in the circles I run in.
It's so hot right now, yeah. But based on that method, she talks about storing your clothes in a drawer vertically, so kind of folding it and turning it up instead of stacking it all on top of each other. So doing that and just kind of having this order, it has made the process more meditative and just like a ritual. You totally nailed it.
Well, one thing that I don't want to escape is, so when people read your article, and they should read your article, your talk about enjoying the process of caring, like the words that you're using, caring for your clothing. Mm. And previously you resented the time and energy you put into it. And the biggest change, I'm paraphrasing what you said here, is you enjoy doing it now. It's giving back to the articles of clothing that take care of you as they use them. As you mm-hmm. use them, I should say. Like, they keep you warm. It's Minnesota. It gets cold. So the things that keep you warm, we should appreciate. We should be grateful for. They're comfortable. They generate happiness because you only are left with what you love. And washing, folding, nicely putting away these items, showing them appreciation for their service. I've never heard somebody talk about laundry in their clothing like they're actually in a relationship with them. But right. It's a really cool lens in which we can view things through. So I wanted to make sure that people caught that too.
I appreciate it. It is a little goofy in reality, but I feel very strongly that way. And I start to realize that I think our relationship with all of our things could eventually get there, right? Because you start to really have gratitude for the things that are around you and the things that are left. Everything that remains, I think, is the minimalist catchphrase. Kind of, it's the things that are left once you've gotten rid of the distractions and the things that you don't really use or need that often. The things that are left really help your life out a lot, and you gain a lot of appreciation for what you didn't really know you had, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you've already mentioned two books. So one, that which has increased your happiness and relationship with laundry. You mentioned Everything That Remains by Joshua Fields Milburn and Ryan Nicodemus. I have read that book. Amazing, amazing book. Are there any other books that you've read in the past year or so that just totally blew up your worldview in a really cool way?
So definitely a recent one that I actually just finished was Simplify by Joshua Becker.
JB.
Yep. The good homie JB. Yeah. He has inspired me in multiple ways as well, as have you, obviously, in so many ways, been responsible for many changes I've made in the last couple months. But Simplify is a great book. And another one that's kind of outside of minimalism, but you had mentioned about the minimally viable product concept, is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. Hmm. That is one that definitely changed my philosophy around trying and failing, which I think applies to a lot of things in life. So it's a great read.
Pretty much everything.
Everything.
Most things we try, we fail at least initially. And right. If we don't give up on them, then we can continually fail until one day we fail not as bad or not as much. Yeah, one thing, and like I was half joking when I said that you will hopefully influence me in a positive way. I am so comprehensive, which some people think it's just funny or it's ironic. You know, here's this dude who's into minimalism and simple living, yet he does everything comprehensively. And I'm constantly resisting that urge. And really, it's an urge. Like, whenever I do something, I love nuance, I love context, I love giving it to people. That's one of the reasons why this interview is going to be 40 or 50 minutes instead of 20 minutes, because I want to draw out stories. I want to give myself and other people a long runway to get going so they can really land that point home. So can you tell us how that lean startup methodology has influenced you outside of the world of business? Can you give us an example or two?
Definitely. Most recently, I started climbing. I started climbing at an indoor climbing gym in August of 2014. So not too long ago. It's something I had never done before. And I used to, I'll say, have a horrible fear of heights. Even 10 or 15 feet in the air, I feared my imminent death from falling to the abyss 10 feet below. And so that was something that I went into just wanting to try it. Definitely, I climbed maybe one 20-foot wall and then half of another 20-foot wall on my first time there. And it cost $27. And I climbed 1.5 walls. So it was definitely not a, I would say, fulfilling experience, other than it proved that it was very difficult and I kind of enjoyed it. And that very much became the MVP to me now climbing 2 to 3 times a week and no longer being afraid of heights, at least up to about 80 feet, which is, I think, the highest wall in that particular climbing gym. And in effect, I just realized that climbing, in a way, is a perfect analogy of the MVP, or of the try and fail better and then fail better every time. If you climb a wall, there's so many different ways. There are different routes. There are different strategies you can use to climb it. And you're probably going to fail on the first time. And if you don't, you're probably not trying a wall that's hard enough for you. So you expect to fail, and you expect to fail better the next time because you've learned something along the way. And that inevitably leads to you hitting the top of that wall maybe a week, maybe a month after you first try it, but you do it. And then there's another wall waiting for you that's harder or different. It's become this perfect, beautiful thing that also has allowed me to get over my fear of heights. So I've really enjoyed it. That's just one example of how I think it applies to life.
If only I was good with metaphors. You've just given me a gold mine to play with, and I don't even know what to do with it. Fortunately, you and I, we both live in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and as far as climbing goes, there's not a lot of stuff to climb. We're in the Great Plains, and I think our tallest mountain, is 1,400 feet, I think, somewhere in northern Minnesota.
If that, yeah.
If that. I think I've actually climbed that mountain before, and it was not exactly a mountain. But you're doing a ton of traveling now, and that's one thing that I want to hit on as well. So there's a lot of people I know that use minimalism to gain enough freedom to travel whenever and wherever the heck they want. Even folks like me with young kids, I have two young boys, and I wouldn't say that I travel wherever and whenever the heck I want, but I could if my wife and I decided that this is a high enough priority. And a lot of that is because of the lifestyle I've created for myself over the past 5 years since my personal renaissance began. I want to know about, from your perspective though, why do you think that combination, this liberation through minimalism and the realization that we actually can act upon. Everybody has this intense desire to travel. Why is that intersection so awesome between minimalism and travel?
Flexibility is the name of the game. It's the flexibility to leap and to try things and to experiment. Minimalism for me means buying a lot less stuff. Buying a lot less stuff means having a lot more cash flow. It means being able to be a one-income household for a while, to try starting a business or doing different things. It's flexibility, and that's what I really, really value from the lifestyle that embodies minimalism.
Yeah, well said. Well, do you mind? Can we just shift gears for a moment here?
Absolutely.
And talk about something that's there's relation here between what we've been talking about. So I published a podcast episode last month. It was about morning rituals. And then 2 days later on your website, you published a blog post about your rituals during the first hour of the day. And I'm like, dude, this is kind of cool. Same wavelength. This is a little weird, but cool totally. At the same time. Would you share with us how you start your day and why you've chosen the certain set of rituals that you have in place?
Definitely. So the morning ritual has been, at this point, I'm about 2 or 3 weeks into this consistent morning ritual. And I will be honest that I've missed a couple days when it doesn't really go as planned. But I do find that whenever I can complete it, it tends to lead to a much better day overall. In general, I'll start off. So I'll wake up. And what I started doing was I started using my alarm again, or my clock radio instead of my cell phone for the alarm. Because whenever I would have the cell phone as the alarm, I would obviously wake up and then pick it up to turn off the alarm. And then I'm already on my phone. And I found that I kept getting into this habit of just laying there in bed, half asleep, looking at emails, Twitter, Instagram, different social media networks, just whatever, for like 20, 25 minutes and not really waking up very well, not really starting my day in A, an intentional way, or B, if you think about it, kind of starting your day with information overload.
Yeah.
Which was the real killer. So I started using my clock radio again. I went kind of the other way. So I started using clock radio, wake up. I give myself about 10 minutes to get out of bed. And then I go take a shower. And ever since I have been married, we take showers at night now as part of just kind of like a cultural difference that I didn't necessarily grow up with. But we take showers at night, and showers were something that I always kind of woke up with, and it helped me get started with the day in the mornings. So I take a shower now, even though I showered the night before. I just take a quick rinse, and that's just like a great way to kind of intentionally take the time to do that, even though it's not technically a necessity. Mm-hmm. So I wake up, give myself about 10 minutes. I go take a shower, get dressed, make some breakfast. Sometimes that's like an egg and lentils and some greens, or it's a banana with peanut butter and a chocolate protein shake or something around those lines. And once I finish that, I have sat and meditated for about 6 to 10 minutes. And that completes the first hour. And I do my very best to not look at my phone at all or any screen for that first hour of the day.
Yeah. Why do you have them in a certain order on purpose, or these are just things that you want to get done in the first hour and it's still young enough that you're still experimenting with the length and the order of things?
So far, so good is what I'll say. It is a young kind of thing that it's maturing on its own, and I'm sure that it will change a bit, but I've found that just kind of the shower wakes me up and prepares me for the day. Getting dressed is obviously needed once I leave the house, so I just get that out of the way. And then having breakfast, and then just once I'm full, I'm not hungry anymore, and then I can kind of peacefully just sit for 6 or 10 minutes. Sometimes I go a little longer, depending on how I'm feeling, but it seems like 6 to 10 minutes is enough to just kind of be there. And then I'll actually work for about 30 to 60 minutes before I go into the office, because I find once I've done that routine, I can just get right into something and knock out maybe one really important thing, because it tends to be a very kind of bustling environment in the office. And so you never know what distractions may come mm-hmm. the first thing as soon as you get in. And so once I get to the office, I try to check my email for the first time around 11 or so. That one's getting difficult because I do have the habit of leaving my email open all day in the browser window, which is just, I'm really trying to get away from that.
I just recently, within the last couple of months, got away from that. I used to be somebody who checked their email, not right away. Hey, actually, here's a tip. If other people are in the same place that you were in terms of you use your smartphone as an alarm and then you find yourself immediately scrolling through Facebook, use your smartphone as an alarm. I still do. But then when I hit the dismiss button and I don't hit snooze, there's no snooze. Like I've programmed in the options for my alarm. Like I can't hit snooze. It's just dismiss and it goes off and I'm up. Lock screen. So once I hit the dismiss button, I need to, if I want to go into my phone and do something else, I have to get past my lock screen and put into a pattern, like a fingerprint pattern.
Sure.
And it's not like I could. Obviously, I have the wherewithal, even though I'm barely conscious, to do that because it's just from muscle memory. But that stops me from doing anything just because I've got that lock screen to get past.
So you've used that as a tool to break the twitch in a way.
I guess you could say that. Yeah, yeah. And one other thing that I wanted to note, or at least ask you a little bit more about, is your meditation. I'm so fascinated by where people learned about the importance of meditation, how they're doing it right now. So a two-part question for you. One, why did you get into meditation in the first place? And how do you do it?
I believe... I had been familiar with the concept of meditation. I had a roommate in college that was, in a way, very spiritual and introduced me to meditation. In fact, the very first example that I can remember of me meditating for any duration of time was the evening that I had called my now wife after meeting for the first time, and I was asking her out to go on another date, and I'd left a voicemail message and she didn't call me back right away, and hours had passed, and I'm sure she had classes or, you know, she was kind of doing lots of stuff because she was still in college at the time. But so I was waiting and waiting, hours had passed, and my friend Adam Paberes is his name, and he said, you know, you're freaking out, just sit, just calm down, it'll be fine, right? And he said, just sit quietly and close your eyes and just think about her calling you. And I promise you, it was probably 10:30 at night at that point, and she called me within 5 minutes of me doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It was the weirdest thing. And I'm not saying that there was any, you know, universal weirdness going on there, but I will say that that opened my eyes to a certain amount of letting the world kind of do its thing, do what you can, but there are things that sometimes you just need to let it be. So that was my first, I was probably 19, maybe 20 at the time when 2021, when that happened.
That's a good first date.
Yeah.
If you went out and then you called her and then the same day she called you back and she was ready to go on another one.
Yep. Yep. And 8 years later, here we are. So something went correctly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something else? Did I cut you off?
Yeah, no, you didn't. But I think in terms of the practice of meditation, I went to, in early 2014, which in a way kind of set me on this path to meeting you and talking about minimalism then and getting into all of these different things. But Amy and I went to a conference of a guy named Kyle Cease. And Kyle Cease is, he was a stand-up comedian and now he does what he calls transformational comedy. So he talks a lot about meditation, stillness, and kind of gets into the whole concept of focus on doing things that make you feel light and get rid of the things that make you feel heavy. Hmm. And I think those concepts apply very well to the likes of minimalism.
Yeah, focus on what makes you feel light and get rid of the things that make you feel heavy. That is just a good life philosophy to try to live by.
Mm-hmm.
That will align pretty good. Huh. So what are some of the other things that make you feel light these days? Are you going to drop any dope hip-hop beats and raps on us before we wrap up?
I don't know that it's going to happen live right now. I've not been known as a freestyler of sorts. but I will say that, you know, once or twice a year, getting together with friends and like producing a track and just getting together and kind of getting some, doing some writing for lyrics and stuff. That's one of my great joys in life is just putting out that creative energy and making a song as ridiculous as it may be. We've written songs about the Mars rover and, you know, stuff like that. It gets crazy, but anything that's like creating and just putting something out into the world, I think, is just a lot of fun. And that's what I'm enjoying right now. I'm just really excited about writing. And I just started producing videos for Break the Twitch as well. And the first one, I'll admit, was pretty rough. But I think we're going to kind of up some production value and continue to see how that goes.
The first one better be rough. If you knock it out of the park the first time around, I'd think that you're some kind of miracle boy and there's something wrong with you.
Minimally viable product is all I'll say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I like the music, and it probably isn't an appropriate time to mention to people that we have plans to sing a duet of the song A Whole New World from the movie Aladdin.
It's going to happen.
It is. Not now. Maybe we'll have that as kind of a bonus where people can listen in the future to our rendition. Like I said, you could be Princess Jasmine or Aladdin. I don't care. I'll do either part and enjoy the heck out of it.
Yeah, it would be great. I think I'd have to take the Aladdin part due to my baritone nature. I might struggle with the alternate part. So
okay, I'll practice. Well, is there anything that we did not talk about that you would like people to know?
Oh, you know, there are lots of things out there, but really, I'm just really happy to have spoken with you and kind of gone over a bunch of this stuff. And I just think there's so much to explore out there, and everything that we do and everything that's around us deserves our attention and questioning in a way. And that's really just what I'm trying to focus on right now and help other people focus on too.
Right on, man. Well, if people want more, people are going to want more, by the way. Where can they find you online?
So they can find the website, which is Break the Twitch. BreakTheTwitch.com. And that's probably the easiest way to find me. All of my contact information and everything is all there.
All of the Twitters and the Facebooks and all that other supplemental stuff.
Indeed.
Is that all there?
Yep. I'm on social media as well, of course. On Twitter, I'm Anthony Ungaro.
All right. And we'll make sure that it's in the show notes so it's easy. By the way, show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM069. You'll find Anthony's social media profiles, links to the blog posts that we've been talking about on Break the Twitch, all kinds of other stuff, which is pretty groovy. Anthony, I just want to say thanks a ton for being a guest on the show. It was fun and it was insightful. Obviously, you and I are buddies, so we had a good time, and hopefully people didn't mind us just kind of riffing back and forth on each other. I really enjoyed it, and I got a lot out of this talk, just personally, so thank you.
I did as well. Again, I really appreciate you having me.
Yo again, friend. Now, is that Anthony fella a cool, authentic, and hip dude or what? I know I'll never look at a load of laundry the same way again, and I hope you'll join me in learning how to better show our clothing some love. Let's show some appreciation for their service and show Anthony some love as well for dropping some deep insight on us. I really encourage you to check out what he's got going on at breakthetwitch.com and or letting him know how this episode impacted you on Twitter by sending him a note at Anthony Ungaro. That's AnthonyUngaro. You'll find his website, where he hangs out on social media, and the many, many fascinating resources we exchanged during the episode in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM069. If you want to connect with me, my email is joel@valueofsimple.com. I enjoy the old Twitter too, where I'm at Joel Zaslofsky, last name, in case you haven't seen it before, ZASLOFSKY. If you're looking to help others with your ideas or questions, it would be pretty swell if you left a comment on the show notes so Anthony and I can give you a chance to shine and respond to what you got bouncing around in that wonderful head of yours. Again, you can find everything for this episode at valueofsimple.com/SASM069. And if you're in Austin, Texas, between March 13th through the 18th, 2015, find me. I'm the almost freakishly tall, really bald, and generally smiley dude roaming the streets and halls of South by Southwest. I'll make sure to share a link to the recording of my experience curating based talk with you once the event organizers put it online. I got one more thing for you. You know what else? Thanks. Seriously, thanks a ton for listening to this whole episode. We're well on our way to 100 episodes, and doing this whole podcasting dealio, knowing that we're taking a similar journey together, means a ton to me. Well, it's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of All Things Value of Simple.